on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and I will be here with you over the next hour on this Friday, October 8th, 2024. We've officially made it to the first Friday of October, and it seems like there's not many Fridays left in this year. Things certainly do, you know, they say as you get older, things do fly by, and I have to agree with you. I feel as though it's seems like just yesterday it was January, but here we go into the midst of the fourth quarter, and the markets are constantly changing. There are rising tensions in the Middle East, political uncertainty at home, and all of these things that do factor into our portfolios. And because we have these economic changes and these political challenges, it's not the time to lose focus. And so we come here each and every day, 5 days a week, hoping to help educate you all. And certainly I get educated as well. And we all leave, all of us in the InvestTalk family, better, more informed investors. Now, the start of the program, in case you have not heard yet, I want to pass along news that KPP Financial will be hosting a new InvestTalk Wealth webinar. This free wealth webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Now, it all happens online in just 4 days. Now, it's a free wealth webinar, as I mentioned, but you still have to go over to investtalk.com and sign up. The upcoming wealth webinar will be on Tuesday, this upcoming Tuesday, October 8th at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Reminder, just go over to investtalk.com and sign up. I look forward to seeing you all. Now, in just a bit, we're going to go through today's market performance and sum up what happened this week and also run down the show topics that we have for you today. But first, let's tackle our first caller question.
This is Steve from Virginia. I want to ask you about HACK ETF, H as Henry A, C-K ETF. I have this ETF and I'm wondering if I should sell now or keep it. Thank you for all you do. Bye-bye.
So the HACK ETF, and I got to say, I am a sucker for cleverly named ETFs, and that is because the HACK ETF is the Amplify Cybersecurity ETF. It markets itself as the first cybersecurity ETF on the market. And what it does is it follows the ISE, Cybersecurity Industry Classification, and looks to do a market cap weighted approach as long as they fit a minimum free float market cap. And so eligible stocks must also drive at least 90% of the revenues from cybersecurity and should score at least 1.25% in revenue contribution. And so what that has done is it has created an ETF that is 26 names, 10% of which is in Broadcom, 57% of which is in the top 10 names. And it does this for you for about 60 basis points. Interestingly enough, it's not actively managed. It is passively managed in a way because it's reconstituted and rebalanced just quarterly. And so this is one of those situations where I take a look at an ETF and I see an ETF that is primarily exposed to large caps, 65% large caps, 27% mid caps, all US companies, all mostly within the same sector, and pretty heavily weighted towards the top 10 names, again, 57%. And I ask myself, you're a passively managed fund. What are you doing to earn that 60 basis points? And I don't think they're doing that much. And so anytime you see some ETF that has very few holdings, doesn't rebalance actively in that they're adding value, right? If you're only rebalancing four times a year, you can have a lot of style drift in that time. And it's also within an asset class that is particularly easy to buy US large caps. I just don't see the point in owning this ETF. If you want to invest in cybersecurity names, by one of these names, by a couple of these names. Mostly these names are going to be driven by the same thing, maybe by a cybersecurity name and by a chip name and do it that way. But either way, looking at this fund, only holding 26 names, all US large cap, all concentrated within tech, primarily going to be driven by the same things over the long term, and then paying 60 basis points on top of it, I would have to pass here. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you. My main focus point today concerns this topic. HELOC pros and cons. Is it right for you in 2024? And will it be right for you in 2025? Understanding the benefits and potential drawbacks of HELOCs, which are home equity lines of credit, allows homeowners to make informed decisions about leveraging their equity. We'll also touch on oil price surging after White House comments in the wake of an Iranian strike on Israel and what that could mean going forward for global demand. We'll touch on why mortgage rates have not fallen, though interest rates are falling. So what really drives mortgage rates? We saw a little bit of a drop off early on after the Fed cut rates, but we've actually seen them rise again. So we'll talk about that. Should we have time at the end of the show? We'll talk about how Wall Street always seems to want to sell you something once they've made their money off of it. And here is their new thing, private credit. We also got some voicemail questions ready to play, including one on IBTM, which is the iShares iBonds December 2032 Term Treasury ETF, and VICSX, which is the Vanguard Intermediate Term Corporate Bond Index Fund. Also, some questions that came in from the comment section of our InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome and encourage you to call anytime throughout the show. Now, we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the InvestTalk Anytime listener line. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc. It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
U.S. stocks finished higher today, ending near their best levels. The Dow up 81 basis points, the S&P 500 up 90 basis points, NASDAQ up 1.22%, and small caps leading the way up 1.5%. S&P and NASDAQ finished narrowly higher for their fourth straight weekly gain. Outperformers included big tech, airlines, autos, banks, retail, apparel, energy names did particularly well today. Underperformers, looks like home builders didn't do particularly well. Building products, HPCs, and managed care also leading the laggards. Dollar index was up 50 basis points with some strength on the yen cross. Gold finished down 40 basis points. WTI crude settled up 90 basis points and logged its best week since March of 2023. Today's big story, I would say, was the September non-farm payroll number, significantly topping its consensus, printed at 254,000 against the expectation range of 140 to 150. Prior 2 months were also revised upward while the unemployment rate ticked down to 4.1%. Average hourly earnings also came in up 40 basis points month over month, just about where it was forecasted. Today's release, interestingly enough, swung the November rate cut expectations decidedly back towards 25 basis points. I think at the last I checked, it was almost 90% that was the implied probability of a 25 basis point cut at the next meeting. Though it's still important to note that there's a lot of data that's going to come in between now and the next meeting in early November, November 6th and 7th. At the same time, Mideast tensions remained in play as the market still expects Israel to make some sort of response to Iran's missile attack earlier this week, though the U.S. is certainly trying to temper that response. No notable impact from the tentative agreement between dock workers and port operators that ended the strikes at East and Gulf Coast ports, though that's likely because the strike was so short-lived that there probably won't be any lasting effects. Summit of the week on the bullish side, back to being in good news is good news territory, non-farm payrolls being a big signifier of that. Four-week moving average of initial claims also fell back to its lowest level since May. ISM services hit a 19-month high in September, with new orders component also jumping to a 19-month high. And the dovish global monetary policy headlines, as the new PM said in Japan, said the economy is not ready for further tightening, and one of the more hawkish members of the ECB provided implicit backing for October rate cuts, really set the market towards a up seems to be the path of least resistance. On the bear side, Middle East tensions ratcheted up further, as I previously mentioned. Powell said the Fed does not feel like it's in a hurry to cut rates quickly, and certainly the lack of deterioration in the labor market, as shown by those payroll data, would back that up. All around, firmer data drove a big bond yield back up as well. On the corporate side, Apple came under more scrutiny over the iPhone 16. Nike sold off as sales declined more than expected. And from a market perspective, U.S. equities actually saw the biggest outflows since April. Looking ahead to next week, Wednesday, we will get FOMC minutes, Thursday is CPI, and Friday is PPI. I hope you've been telling your friends and family members that our InvestTalk audio podcast is also available in video form on our YouTube channel. Seems like every day now we receive finance and investment questions from the comment section of our InvestTalk YouTube channel. Here's one that came in yesterday. This one from Capital Gains with a Z, great name, Capital Gains with a Z, says, could you give your analysis on Chubb? And if this is a good time to pick up some shares. So as we pull up Chubb, which is ticker CB, I will remind you that the reason why Chubb was really in the news, I would say, in the past couple months is because it was the secret stock that Warren Buffett had asked the SEC that they didn't have to disclose what their holdings were. And there was a big run-up after it was announced that that was added to Berkshire Hathaway's portfolio. And over the past few quarters, they've been continually adding to this name, probably because Chubb has performed pretty well in an otherwise challenging environment for insurers in recent years. And a lot of that is due to their high interest rates, that have been helping their net investment income. And so when you're an insurance company, right, you have preferential pricing, or maybe you take on more risk, and that's how you bring in more revenue. But in their case, they've seen that grow without taking on really that much more risk. Over 52 weeks, they're up 40% year to date. They're up about 28%. It's a $116 billion market cap company that pays not a crazy dividend, but still 1.26%. That's been around 1.5 to 2% over the past 5 years. And like I said, nothing too crazy, but certainly a solid dividend. They only have about $18 billion in debt. Fundamentally, it's a pretty sound name. And even in the wake of all of the demand for their shares, after we learned that it was added to Berkshire's portfolio, you actually didn't see them issuing new capital or equity. Rather, you saw them buying back shares. They've consistently bought back shares since about 2021. And so, as I have mentioned, this company has done well in a rising rate environment. And so as its revenue has increased, you would also expect its cash flow has increased, its profitability has increased. And so again, the question becomes, well, this is a solid name and has a solid balance sheet. Is it at a solid price? It's trading pretty high relative to where you expect to see a lot of insurers. The industry average for an insurer tends to be around a price to book of about one, the exact value of its book assets. This is trading at almost 2x. It's 5-year high. Forward-looking price earnings, 12.5, about near its average. But for an insurance company, again, I'm really keying in on this price to book value here being at its the upper end of its 5-year range. And so it has had a heck of a year. And it remains a fundamentally solid company, which is why Berkshire keeps buying in, buying in, buying in. But it's been marching up steadily since October. It really hasn't had any time to settle down. Now, it's been consolidating since the end of really the beginning of September. And so you could see it range here. And if it doesn't surpass some resistance, it could head back towards a support level about, you know, 280, maybe down into the 270 range. So overall, I would mark this as a good name, a growing name, that maybe the conditions that made it grow in the past year are starting to taper off a little bit, but either way, it is fundamentally and financially sound, but probably at too high a price for me right now. Thanks for the comment. So we have a new break still to come in this podcast and radio show on AM 1220. I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus point. So stay with me. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke?
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds.
You're the best person to ask it.
Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
The symbol is UNIT. Wondering what you thought about this REIT, if it would be a good time to get in.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
So I was thinking, is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR. If you could run that down for me.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today concerns this topic. HELOC pros and cons. Is it right for you in 2024? And so let's talk about HELOCs, home equity lines of credit, and what factors you need to consider before diving right on in. A HELOC can be really a smart move, smart financial move for homeowners needing flexible financing for significant expenses like home renovations or even education costs. It works by allowing you to borrow against the equity in your home, but instead of receiving a lump sum, you draw down from that credit line as you need to. The best part, you only pay interest on what you borrow, not the entire credit limit. And so that makes it a more flexible option compared to traditional loan or refinancing. But is a HELOC a good idea right now? Well, there's a lot of pros and cons, certainly on the good side compared to credit cards or personal loans. HELOCs usually offer lower interest rates, which can save you thousands of dollars over time. You also have the freedom to borrow what you need when you need it, making it ideal for ongoing expenses. Depending on how you use the funds, the interest you pay could be tax deductible, especially if the HELOC is for home improvements. There's also no need to refinance, meaning you won't have to go through the hassle in order to access the equity in your home. But it's not all positives. Like a mortgage, your home backs the loan. If you're unable to make payments, you risk losing the property itself. Unlike fixed rate loans, HELOCs often come with variable rates, which means your payments could increase over time if rates rise. Having access to such a large credit line can also be a bad temptation, and overspending could certainly lead to financial strain and put you in a worse place than you were before. Lastly, some HELOCs come with closing costs, and so you could have closing costs for getting this loan in the range of 2-5%, which means you need to be particularly aware when you're being offered these things, what the upfront fees and costs are. So when is it a good idea? Well, it makes the most sense if you have significant home equity, if you have a stable financial situation, if you have a clear plan for when and how you'll use the funds, especially if those funds will increase the value of your home. Maybe you want to do some home improvement and that'll boost your property's market worth. That could justify taking out a HELOC. But you also need to make sure that you have practiced good financial skills and literacy. If you decide to go down this path, you need to keep an eye on market conditions because, as I mentioned, a lot of these are variable rates, which means your monthly payments can fluctuate over time. If you take out one of these loans and later struggle to repay it, remember, your home is on the line. A HELOC can be a valuable tool for homeowners, offering flexibility, potential lower interest rates, and a manageable repayment structure. However, it's essential to consider the risks, particularly if you're unsure about the stability of your income or the future of your financial needs. This is InvestTalk. Here comes another caller question. This one came directly from our InvestTalk voice bank.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Frank from LA, longtime listener of the show. Thanks for all you guys do. I've recently moved most of my portfolio into utilities and bonds. With regards to bonds, I wanted to ask you, what kind of duration would you guys prefer in this environment? I've recently added two bonds ETFs to my portfolio. One is the iShares dollar denominated treasury bond ETF with a duration of 7 to 10 years, ticker symbol IBTM. And the second one is the iShares Euro government bond ETF with a duration of 15 to 30 years, ticker symbol IBGL. How would you think about duration in this environment? And based on that, my second question is whether or not you like these two names that I've picked. Thank you very much for all you guys do again, and I'll be listening on the show.
Okay, so let's tackle this piece by piece. First and foremost, I would say what you've seen in the wake of interest rate cuts is originally you see the 10-year yield going down, and now it's kind of creeping back up a bit. Why is that? Well, originally there was this expectation that there would be X amount of basis points cut by the end of the year, right? A very aggressive rate cutting cycle. What you've seen is that pared back a lot. Why? Because the economy and the labor market is a lot stronger, or appears to be stronger, over the past couple months, with two upward revisions and then good numbers this month that wouldn't necessarily warrant aggressive rate cuts. Now, people talk all the time about the cost of servicing our debt, which is a problem, but they look at it in the wrong way. And so if you look at the increase in interest payments, yes, that's an issue. But if you look at the increase in real interest costs, meaning adjusted for inflation, the work of inflation is still diluting a lot of debt over time. And so that's one of the reasons why Justin says that, you know, that looking going forward, we expect to be in a higher rate environment. Now, that's higher compared to where we were before. Anytime the Federal Reserve does these interest rate maneuvers, they're going to push up what is called the neutral rate. And so where I would expect to be now, the problem why it's difficult to say and why I would generally tend to be on the shorter to medium term maturity area of the curve is because a lot is going to depend on what happens to fiscal deficits over the next year. And with political uncertainty also leads to uncertainty regarding how much debt is going to need to be serviced and the upward pressure of fiscal spending on rates. So we'll get back into this and look at this fund when we get back. It's really complicated, so we're going to need two segments to deal with this. On the next Invest Talk, the story behind this headline: 5 critical year-end tax deadlines for retirees. Understanding deadlines for RMDs, Roth conversions, and charitable giving can help retirees optimize their tax planning. That's Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about Prize Picks? Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. All you do is pick more or less on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Prize Picks is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. That's right. If your player leaves in the first half and doesn't return, your Prize Picks still live. And this is good. Prize Picks puts their members first, so all withdrawals are safe, fast, and secure. When my picks hit, I can get my money in as quick as 15 minutes. Prize Picks invented the flex play, which means you can still cash out if your lineup isn't perfect. You can double your money even if one of your picks doesn't hit. I've been playing Prize Picks recently, and I have no idea why I waited so long. So download the Prize Picks app today. Use code INVEST and get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code INVEST on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game. Prize Picks is a skill-based fantasy game. Go to prizepicks.com now.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
So before the break, I was trying to highlight how the difficulty with deciding to go longer on the yield curve right now is that there is a lot of uncertainty about fiscal deficits moving forward. Now, that's always the case every 4 years. Why? Because we in America tear down our government and rebuild it every 4 years. So for me, a lot of the uncertainty about the size of deficits, though I want to note again, it's important that you don't look at debt in terms of real GDP, but instead the real servicing cost of that interest, because debt gets inflated away over time. But still, the gap, the fiscal gap, there's a lot of uncertainty there that could drive longer-term rates higher. You've seen it in the short term. You saw rates dive when the Fed started cutting rates, but then you've seen them creep up a little bit more. And so for me, because of that, because of all that uncertainty, I wouldn't necessarily be locking in longer-term debt now, because as we know, longer-term debt, longer maturity debt, longer duration debt is more affected by changes in interest rates. Now, keeping that in mind, let's take a look at the iShares iBonds December 2032 Term Treasury ETF. If what you're looking for is long-term debt, this is a perfectly fine fund. Does it for about 7 basis points, exactly what you would expect. And it's going to hold treasuries at the maturity of 2032. Very, very simple and straightforward. But to answer the core of your question, which is where do you want to be? I would say because of the uncertainty about fiscal deficits going forward, which could in turn cause the Fed to raise rates, I would still stay shorter on the shorter end of the curve rather than the long end. Now, it is Friday, so let's briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. This week in the KPP Insights section, we discussed sector classifications. How do they determine where a company falls, and what does it mean to be in each of these sectors, as well as what are some common providers of these classifications? Stock ideas section, we mentioned a well drilling contractor and an oil and gas company. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on the effects of labor strikes on the economy. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and hit subscribe. If you do, the newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday mornings. There have certainly been a lot of developments in the Middle East recently. So today, let's talk about why we're seeing oil prices surge to their highest levels in over a month. And the reason why is a rise in geopolitical tensions that has left traders a little bit worried that Israel could retaliate against Iran's oil infrastructure. The speculation follows statements by U.S. President Joe Biden, who acknowledged that such a move is under discussion after a missile attack on Israel reportedly launched by Iran. Brent crude, a key benchmark for global oil prices, jumped more than 5% on Thursday, closing at $77.62 per barrel, and continued climbing on Friday. Concerns are growing that a broader regional conflict could disrupt vital oil exports, especially those passing through the Strait of Hormuz, a key choke point bordering Iran. Now, the heart of this tension is the question of whether Israel will target Iran's oil facilities, something that Biden and other world leaders are cautioning against. In fact, the U.S. and its allies are trying to prevent an escalation that could send shockwaves to the global economy, particularly in energy markets. Although Biden stated that no Israeli action was imminent, his administration is reportedly engaging in behind-the-scenes talks to moderate Israel's response, and that's because the stakes are certainly high. A strike on Iranian refineries could trigger a series of retaliations, potentially leading to disruptions across the region's oil fields, its refineries, and its shipping lanes. Interestingly, despite these tensions, You haven't really seen prices explode like you may have otherwise seen happen. Why? Well, one reason is a lack of demand out of China. And another is something that we talked about Wednesday, which is the spare production capacity available from other OPEC Plus members, which is now estimated to be at over 5 million barrels per day. And so that's kept prices from soaring even further. But if conflict intensifies and Iranian oil exports are compromised, the market could shift dramatically and it could shift quickly. While the immediate risk of a full-blown oil supply crisis may be tempered by global supply buffers, the ongoing geopolitical uncertainty makes the situation one to watch very closely. If Israel strikes Iran, especially its oil infrastructure, it could set off a chain of events that would heavily impact global energy markets, global demand, and therefore the global economy. Let's keep things moving and swing back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I have a question for Justin and Luke. Calling in with a question on bond fund. It's the Vanguard Intermediate Term Corporate Bond. The symbol is VICSX. Wanted to see, I think the average duration of the bonds is 6 years. If I were to put money into this fund in like my retirement account, and then if I were to pull it out before 6 years, does that mean that I would lose money on the account, or do you have to hold it for at least 6 years, or what does it mean that, I guess, it's for the long term, but in case I need to pull money out? And also just wondered, for the timing to buying into a mutual fund, is it best to wait tax-wise till sometime like in January or in December? I don't know if it makes a difference or not. So I know buying ETFs are more tax efficient, but if I want to get into a mutual fund, is there any cons or pros to buying it in December tax-wise versus somewhere in the earlier part of next year? Thank you for your show, and I'll be listening for the answer on your podcast.
Great. So let's talk about bond funds. And this is a mutual fund, which is, like the caller said, inherently less tax efficient, though mostly that's because of how applications and redemptions happen to the fund. But either way, you're not really going to see any immediate tax benefit by buying this now versus a month from now versus 3 months from now. And so let's go back to the core of your question, which was, this is a bond fund with an average duration of 6 years. So what happens if you want to sell it before 6 years is up? Well, as we talk about all the time, and as you all know, owning a bond and owning a bond fund are different in that when you own a fund, the value of your holdings is based upon the net asset value of that fund on any given day. And you can hold it forever, but you're not guaranteed to get your money back, right? If you hold a bond, so long as the issuer does not default, you will get your money back at the end. You will get return of principal. That doesn't happen here. So when it says that the average duration is 6 years, that doesn't mean you have to hold it for 6 years. That just means they are targeting their holdings, the bonds, funds, holdings. The average duration of those holdings is going to be 6 years, around 6 years at any given time. You can hold it as long as you want. You can hold it for as little as you want. Not really going to make much of a difference. See if we can fit in another question now.
Hi, my name is Zach, calling out of Minnesota. My question is in regards to Starbucks, ticker SBUX. Just curious on what you guys would think a good entry point for Starbucks would be now. I have it on my watch list and looking into pick up a position for a long-term hold, and wondering if now is a good time to maybe get in, or it could be going down a little bit lower. Love to get your opinion on a good price. Thank you.
Take a look at Starbucks. I think we get calls about Starbucks pretty frequently. And I do mention that we did buy Starbucks for our clients and continue to hold it for our clients. I think we picked it up somewhere in like the 70, 76, 77 range. And it's done pretty well since then. It had a big old pump in August, and it's been ranging between about 92, 97 ever since then. And so, much like a lot of other names, the Nikes of the world, your Ultas of the world, one of the core issues was the strength of the consumer for Starbucks. And what you have seen is better than expected earnings since then. You've seen a company that is pretty fundamentally sound continue to improve performance as the consumer is stronger than a lot of people expected. Now, it's a $108 billion market cap company. It's got $24 billion in debt. Its cash flow has been improving. Its profitability has been improving since 2021. It, again, seemed to me always to be a company that was generally suffering because of overarching market conditions. Another benefit they have is something that they may not even have been able to fix yet, is they can't fully service all the people that want to buy Starbucks, right? Coffee, I've said this before, is sold primarily during a window. And one of the biggest issues they had, which their CEO alluded to, is that they have not been able to, through their app, through their online platform, fully capture all the demand that's there. And so for all of those reasons, I think that Starbucks is a solid investment. It's why we hold it for our clients. It's currently trading about 3x sales, 5-year average about of 28, about 24 times forward-looking price to earnings, 5-year average about 28 there. I would say that, you know, generally speaking, it's been ranging here for about a month or so. I don't know if it's going to drop off precipitously from here. We still hold it, so I think Starbucks is a solid investment. Thanks for the call. InvestTalk has now achieved an excess of 59 million downloads, and it's all thanks to you. Our work continues in 30 seconds, so hang on.
The newest InvestTalk Wealth webinar is happening online and free in just a few days. The InvestTalk Wealth webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming Wealth webinar, October 8th. It's free to attend, but you must pre-register. And please tell your friends.
Today is Friday, and not only do we bring you a little teaser of the KPP Premium newsletter, but we also like to generally do a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. Let's dive in. 2-year treasury yield was at 3.907%. For perspective, last week that number was 3.565. 9 weeks back, it was 3.882. And 47 weeks ago, it was 5.05. In fact, close to 3 years ago, it was 64 basis points. Those times are certainly gone. 10-year treasury yield is at 3.969. Last week, it was at 3.752. 5 weeks ago, it was at 3.921. 47 weeks back, it was at 4.63. And 141 weeks ago, it was at 1.762. Gold was priced at $2,649 per ounce today. Last week, that number was 2646. 47 weeks ago, it was 1,935, and 135 weeks ago, it was 1,806. Silver today was at $32.19 per ounce. Last week, that number was $31.55. 33 weeks ago, it was $22.80, and 128 weeks ago, it was $23.94. Oil was selling for $75.32 per barrel today. Last week, that number was $67.79. 43 weeks ago, it was $74.30, and 143 weeks ago, it was $66.62. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.18, a 4-cent decrease from last week. 70 weeks ago, it was $3.56. 118 weeks ago, it was $4.25. And 138 weeks ago, it was $3.57. In California, it was averaging $4.66 per gallon, a 4-cent decrease from last week as well. 49 weeks ago, it was $5.32. 125 weeks back, it was $5.87. For comparison, in Kansas and Kentucky, gas was averaging $2.85 per gallon today. That is $1.81 less per gallon than gas in California. Let me pivot back over to the InvestTalk Voice Bank and answer another caller question.
This is Joseph from Elizabethtown, Kentucky. I'm in my early 40s. I've always invested in the S&P 500 index funds since my late teens. And I was just kind of curious if you guys do believe for the next 20 years, if the Vanguard Healthcare Fund, VHT, that that's going to maybe beat out the broad market indexes over the long term. Obviously, we're all getting older. Healthcare is always going to be in vogue, so to speak. So I kind of want to shuffle some money in a more concise ETF. I just want to get your thoughts if that sector for healthcare for the next 20 years is the better way to go. Thank you.
So the Vanguard Healthcare ETF, VHT, gives you broad healthcare exposure within the U.S. So it gives you healthcare providers, service, healthcare provider and services companies, healthcare equipment and supply manufacturers, med tech, pharmaceuticals, biotech names. Does it for about 10 basis points, and that is because it is a passively managed portfolio. And it does it market cap weighted. So what does it look like in terms of its market cap breakdown? Well, about 86% large caps, 7% mid caps, 2% small caps. The top 10 names hold about 48% of the weight. It has 415 holdings. So again, it is a very, very broad-based healthcare index. And so you said a lot of your money is tied up in the S&P. And so you're going to hold a lot of these names that are already in this portfolio. And what you're essentially doing is saying, well, you know, I think healthcare is going to do well. And so I'm going to tilt towards there. What I want to caution you against is anytime you do some sort of tilt like this, I wouldn't overexpose yourself. I don't think you ever want to be overexposed to one sector. There are people that really, really loved tech headed into the year 2000 and really didn't like it after that. Why? Because they were overexposed to one sector that had a very large drawdown. And so when you're talking about investing money over the long term, I don't see any issues with you tilting a little bit towards healthcare. Why? Because of the reasons you said. We are getting older as a population. Healthcare costs are increasing, and therefore healthcare revenues are increasing, and healthcare profits have been doing pretty well, and that'll probably continue for the foreseeable future. So if you want to tilt a little bit, I'm perfectly fine with that. Don't go overboard, because as you take on more and more exposure, concentrated exposure, you take on more risk as well. We're moving into a break, our final break. So give me a call before this beautiful weekend starts. You know the number. 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Invest Talk Wealth Webinar is happening online and free soon. The Invest Talk Wealth Webinar will focus on effective strategies for managing your 401k and enhancing your retirement savings. Go to investtalk.com and sign up for our upcoming Wealth Webinar, October 8th.
Before we head off, why don't we answer another question from our InvestTalk YouTube channel question bank. This one from Roger Risinger. Hope I pronounced that correctly. It says, hey, Luke and Justin, Roger from Spokane here again. I've been looking at Nutanix, symbol NTNX. Reading the Schwab equity rating, it looks like earnings per share and revenue are both supposed to grow next year. Just wondering what your thoughts are on the company and if this is a good time to buy or wait. So Nutanix is a packaged software company. They are a cloud web scaling platform. And they've had a pretty good couple quarters. They beat estimates on the top and the bottom lines in their last quarterly report. Revenue growth is expected to accelerate into next year. Free cash flow jumped on the quarter as well. And one thing that is good for them on the horizon is they have a partnership with Dell. And so Dell, and not only do they have a partnership with Dell, they also have plans for a new product, which makes it more likely that adoption is driven for their platform. Now, growth has been pretty solid over the past 5 years, about 11% on an annualized basis going back to 2018. And free cash flow, again, has turned positive back in 2022 and up significantly, almost double what it was last year. With that being said, they have not yet made money, though they are projected to make money this upcoming year. They're a $15 billion market cap company with about $695 million in debt. And one thing they've done over the past 5 years that I don't particularly like is issue a lot of shares. And so what you have here is a very high PE company, about 38, 40 times, about 21 times forward-looking price to cash flow. And even with all of this, I'm still hesitant to buy here because it looks a little overbought to me, to be honest. And so I would keep this on my watch list. It's up 80% over the past year. Now, it did drop off a little bit in May at from a high of 75. Now it's settled back down to 60, but it still looks pretty bearish to me. So overall, I would keep this on my watch list. It looks like the company is certainly headed in the right direction. If growth continues, this is something that I would want in my portfolio, but not right now. Now, one more thing I want to talk about is something that affects a lot of people. And it begs this question, what's happening with mortgage rates, especially in light of the Federal Reserve's recent interest rate cuts? Just a couple of weeks ago, the Fed lowered its benchmark rate by half a percentage point, and many expected that mortgage rates would follow suit. And for a brief moment, they did drop. They dropped slightly, giving some homeowners hope. But here's the catch. After an initial dip, mortgage rates actually began to rise again. So what's going on? First, it's important to understand that mortgage rates aren't directly tied to the short-term interest rates set by the Fed. Instead, they're often influenced by longer-term benchmarks, like the yield on the 10-year Treasury bond or the 30-year. These Treasury yields reflect what investors think the economy might look like in the months and years ahead, and when those yields go up, mortgage rates tend to rise as well. And that's exactly what happened here. After the Fed's rate cut in mid-September, Treasury yields climbed, pushing mortgage rates higher as well. According to Freddie Mac, the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage rose to 6.12% in the days after the Fed's move, up from 6.09%. This might seem counterintuitive, especially for those of us hearing about neighbors with mortgage rates in the 2 to 3% range, but it's a reminder that mortgage rates fluctuate based on broader economic conditions. And right now, uncertainty is causing rates to move more unpredictably. Mark Palam, chief economist at Fannie Mae, explained it well. The key is not just how much the Fed cuts rates, but how investors interpret those cuts for the future. The market expects more economic volatility or stronger than expected data that could keep rates from falling as much as homeowners hope they will. The big takeaway? While many of us are hoping for lower mortgage rates, the path forward is anything but clear. For rates to come down meaningfully, we'd likely need to see much worse news about the economy, but certainly that's something that nobody is rooting for. Before we head off to the weekend, once again, I want to remind you that we have an upcoming wealth webinar on October 8th. I will not have another opportunity to remind you because I will be back on Wednesday. So I wanted to say it one more time, our upcoming wealth webinar on October 8th. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you and they can get at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. I hope you've heard by now that we have a video show as well on our InvestTalk YouTube channel. That is InvestTalk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.